702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, another suspect appears in court for the disappearance of Jocelyn Smith. The President and Chief Justice speak at a national conference on human rights. Diepkloof residents promise to keep protesting following this morning's traffic disruptions. Sidi Madia is in the US. We'll get a live report from her on election developments there. And we'll wrap up the weekend sports. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. As you heard in the news bulletin there, Sidi Madia is in the US. She's been in Nevada. She's in Ohio now. And of course, South Africa is not the only country that is going to the polls this year. More than half of the globe is going to be voting in an election this year. So it's not just South Africa. We'll look at the situation in the US as well. Parallels being drawn between Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma and their resurgence. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. Send me a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. But let's start with a court appearance today at the Vredenburg Magistrates Court. A 32-year-old woman appearing in court this morning, and this is to do with the disappearance, the alleged trafficking of 6-year-old Jocelyn Smith. So police say they are still working on this case. They cannot disclose operational details. What we know is that Laurentia Lombard, 32-year-old, has been charged with kidnapping and human trafficking. The 6-year-old Jocelyn Smith still remains missing. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, following the story for us. Carlo, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What do we know about Laurentia Lombard and why she has now been charged?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Yes, and so earlier we saw the 32-year-old Laurentia Lombard appear in the Vredenburg Magistrates Court. Outside, things were much calmer, not much of a turnout from the community. What we did hear from them is that they were not surprised that Lombard has now been added to the case. We spoke to some of the people who were part of the search for Jocelyn quite early on, just after she disappeared. And what they said was when they actually confronted Lombard about her possibly being involved in Jocelyn's disappearance, her body language was quite off. She was stuttering, and it raised some red flags with the community. Inside court, we heard State Prosecutor Jacques Van Zyl telling the magistrate, Yolisa Sipoyo, that Lombard had confessed to her involvement in the disappearance of Jocelyn. Now, the details of that confession have, of course, not yet been revealed, but police have indicated that various members of the public are being interviewed as part of the investigation into Jocelyn's disappearance.
So, Carlo, any indication at this stage what role she may have played? I know that that confession hasn't been made public, but do we understand where she fits into this network?
At this moment, Mandy, police are being quite tight-lipped about that, but she will be appearing in court again on the 25th of March for a bail application. After that, in all likelihood, she will be added as accused number 4 when the 3 other accused appear on the 13th of May. And hopefully at that stage, more will be revealed.
And tomorrow marks a month since Jocelyn Smith disappeared. Do we know anything more about the police search and how confident they may be in terms of finding her?
Well, when last we spoke to police about the whereabouts of Jocelyn, they did say that new information had emerged with regard to her whereabouts. Since then, they have not said anything more. We do know that the community in Saldanha Bay have stopped actually searching for Jocelyn, but of course, police's search and investigation is ongoing.
Carlo, thank you very much. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, speaking to us there about the court appearance today. So 32-year-old Laurentia Lombard has been charged with kidnapping and human trafficking. So she is now the fourth accused in this case. She'll be joined to the other three as well. We don't know exactly what role she played. It is understood that she confessed. But as things stand at the moment, Jocelyn Smith is still missing. And tomorrow marks a month since she went missing. How concerning is that?
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
So this morning, disruptions on the N12 East and the N1 Highway at the Diepkloof Interchange in Joburg. And that's because protesters from the Diepkloof Hostel in Soweto barricaded the roads with rocks and burning tyres. They are unhappy about electricity, water, housing, service delivery in general. Veronica Mahaudi, EWN reporter, was there for us. Veronica, good afternoon to you. Speak us through what exactly happened this morning and why.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, what we saw today was, I think, what is about to become one of many demonstrations coming from the Diepkloof Hostel, where residents barricaded very key routes in regards to the peak hour traffic in the morning. There was clashes between JNPD police and residents from that community who essentially, Mandy, sent out a circular on social media warning of a shutdown over the issues that you have just mentioned. But at the heart of the issue today, Mandy, was really the housing crisis that many of the residents and the community members of that hostel have said they've been living in for decades. Mandy, you'd know that many of our hostels in Soweto were built around the 1970s, and they say that since around that time, there has been little effort to refurbish these areas. In fact, Mandy, we found out from community members today that many of them had been living without water and electricity, and that they were just installed, in fact, Mandy, just about last week. We remember Joburg Mayor Kabelo Komanda visited this very hostel in regards to the same issues after about 3 weeks of sporadic protests that turned extremely violent between police members. Journalists were caught in a crossfire, and essentially it was over the same issue of service delivery. And so today, Mandy, what we saw from residents was them returning back to the streets saying, you had made a verbal promise about sorting out the issue of housing in this area, and we have still not seen any show of whether it be political leadership or any just effort to come and restore the housing issue there.
Veronica, just quickly, is the interchange, the Diepkloof interchange, fine now for motorists who may want to go through that area? What are the Joburg Metro Police saying?
Well, Mandy, JNPD responded very swiftly following, of course, the circulation of a shutdown. They were there overnight, well into the morning, saw them, of course, clamping down, even going into the area of the hostel to ensure that there was no more sort of disruptions to that traffic flow. So the N12 East is flowing, as well as the Diepkloof Interchange, as well as the Chris Honey Road that joins that section of the road, Mandy.
Veronica, thank you. Veronica Mahaudi, EWN reporter, giving us an update on that situation. Well, let's hear now from Diepkloof Hostel resident Sanele Msibi, who's joining us to air more of these concerns. Sanele, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for making time to speak to us. Why were residents protesting this morning? What is the concern of residents in Diepkloof?
Hey, the reason here, because of one and the same thing that we demanded from the frame. We want houses. That's the only thing. You asked the frame last year to come and see the situation of these hostels. He didn't come. He didn't come. And we engaged many times with his office, Mr. Panyazalusov. And the officials there, they eventually said, no, we're at the dead end now. We're at the end now. There's no action. And we also said, guys, we've been patient with you. If I can forward you the minutes that we had with the officials, you can see it's been 8 or 9 meetings last day. That's why they came to us. They said no, there will be action.
Okay,
we gave them time, but nothing. And the worst thing, each and every year there is budget for hostel. Where does that budget go? It goes to people
Sanele, I'm just going to stop you there. I'm sorry. There's quite a lot of wind disruption. I want to make sure that we can hear you. So if you can maybe just move out the wind. What do you hope that protesting like you did this morning and closing the road, what do you hope that will achieve? Do you believe that this will be fruitful? And I heard on the news bulletin someone saying, perhaps it was yourself, that you'll continue until election day.
Yes, we'll continue. We until we get what we want. We'll continue protesting. Because the situation here is not that the same as that of the Premier Panyaza Tsovo. The Panyaza Tsovo is in relations. He can't face this. Because you don't like to be on the road and doing all of that stuff. It's because of the situation pushing us here. The walls are falling apart. The roof out. The floor out. So how can we live under this condition? I think we've seen the visuals or the photos there. The conditions here are worse. So we want the Prima to respond and come and see what we're talking about.
Sanele, thank you so much for joining us. Sanele Mcebe, Diplo of Hostel Residents, speaking to us there about the concerns of residents. And as Veronica explained as well, these are long-running issues. And I do imagine this is going to be one of many disruptions, protests, demonstrations that we're going to see in the run-up to the elections on May 29th. I think we're going to see a lot more taking to the streets, a lot more desperation from residents who want politicians to actually hear them.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Well, as you heard there, some of the concerns from those residents at the Dipkloof Hostel are around electricity, around water supply. And water, again, has been something that we've been following for the last couple of weeks. The Joburg Mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, was on the 702 breakfast show this morning with my colleague, Bongani Bingwa, about the ongoing water crisis in the city. Kabelo Gwamanda saying that the system is now at capacity, but he does admit that areas like Soweto and others are still without water. Have a listen.
The water systems have been restored. Where we realized that there would be a delay beyond what we had anticipated, we undertook an exercise of bypassing the water supply from the reservoirs directly to the tap, so that we ensure that we get water to our residents speedily. But for the communities that are without water, and I heard about Soweto yesterday, but I am going there today to go and do an assessment to get a determination as to why exactly is there a challenge with water.
The Joburg Mayor, Kabelo Gwamanda, speaking there about the situation in Joburg to my colleague, Bongani Bingwa, earlier today on 702. And as he explains, he is going to Soweto today. And that just is in response also to what's happening with those Diepkloof Hostel residents complaining that politicians do not come and see them, do not give them what they're asking for. So don't forget, election season, maybe something will happen.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
12:24 on the Midday Report. Let's get an update now on the Senzo Miyiwa trial, because remember, of course, we are back in action at the Senzo Miyiwa trial. After the trial within a trial ended after 5 months last week, Magistrate Vivian Cronier expected to be on the witness stand this week. She is the magistrate who took Bongani Ntanzi's statement. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter, joining us now. Khumotso, good afternoon to you. Magistrate Vivian Cronier on the stand. What has she been testifying about?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, as we've seen with the the last two witnesses that we had, who were police officers who took the confession statement from Bongani Ndanzi and Muzisia, Magistrate Leon Krenier also had to come back onto the witness stand. She, of course, took Bongani Ndanzi's second confession statement on the 24th of June 2020, and she's read the statement into the record. I think now what's been happening, really, at least for me as a reporter here, is that, you know, you kind of compare what's in the initial confession statement that Bongani Ndanzi signed before Lieutenant Colonel Raphadu and the one that he signed before Magistrate Krenier. And I can tell you that there are some differences, actually a bit more detail that he goes into. The one glaring difference is how in the second confession statement that he signed before the magistrate, he speaks about how fearful he was after the incident, after the murder of Senzo Menua. He speaks about how he was shivering at the Basutu Hospital because he had never done anything like this before. He even speaks a lot about how he was allegedly threatened by accused number three, Ntobi Sengube, who told him that if he said anything about what they'd done to Senzo Menua, he would get him killed himself. And he says that, you know, all the other accused would often meet without him and have conversations either where he could not hear or they tell him to leave the room. Now, Ndanzi still maintains that he was called while he was at a Carltonville mine where he was working to help with the murder of Senzo Menua. Something else that's interesting, Mandy, is how he's introduced someone else in the second statement, someone by the name of Simpiwe, saying Simpiwe brought the firearms to them, supplied them with the firearms that they used to murder Senzo Menua. But he says he didn't have a gun. He only had a small gun of his own in his pocket. Now, that's interesting in light of the fact that we've heard in the trial, within the trial, that he was described as a great gun supplier, having allegedly supplied firearms to many criminals who carried out various crimes.
Of course, consistencies are always important to look out for when it comes to a confession like this. How consistent is this version that we're hearing now with other versions that we've heard throughout this trial?
Well, you know, Mandy, it's not very consistent. I mean, just having compared the two confession statements, the themes are rather, you know, quite the same. Both confession statements detail how Kelly Khumalo, according to him, was the trigger point or the mastermind in all of this. But there are some differences here. I mean, you kind of listen to Bongani Ndanzi's statement, both his confession statements, and you compare them to Muzi Gaukulelwa's confession statement. The people that feature in the statement are completely different. Dia spoke about people we haven't heard of before, someone by the name of Marco and someone by the name of Makimba. Ndanzi makes no mention of those people. Dia says that there were three people in the house when he entered, or when Makimba and Marco entered into the house to murder Senzo Menua. But we know that there were seven people in the house, and this is all consistently mentioned by the state, as well as those who were in the house when Menua was killed. So there are many, many versions. But I think what we need to remember is that these confession statements don't have to be consistent with each other for them to be considered favorably by the court. What needs to happen is that for them to be considered confession statements, Mandy, they need to implicate themselves, and there should be admission of guilt. And that's exactly what can be seen in the statements before the court.
Khumotso, thank you very much. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter, with the latest on the Senzo Menua trial, where Magistrate Vivian Krenier is currently on the stand. Let's listen in live now, and this feed is courtesy of the SABC.
Passenger left back, Muzi Gaukulelwa, Stemba Sibiya.
Umuntu obekade ehleli ngakusanda sesinqele kuleyo moto emuva ubani kubhalwe ukuthi umuzi kaSthemba Sibiya.
Name of photographer is Sergeant Maphakela.
Umuntu obekade ethwebula iyithombe uSergeant Maphakela.
And says depart from Alberton SAPS.
Yona ke iyasuka imoto kusuka eAlberton esiphoyiseni.
If you can use photos 8 and 9 to illustrate your evidence.
Asiyeke kuyithombe isithombe sesishagalombini nesishagalolunye.
Photo 8 and 9 shows myself, the driver, and Muzi Gaukulelwa Sibiya at SAPS Alberton.
Lezo just about to leave. Lezo yithombe sesishagalombini nesishagalolunye zona zibonisa mina nomuzi ebesikade sisesiphoyiseni sase-Albertine sisazohamba.
Sorry, are you not able to beam the photos for the other accused to see this?
Yeah, that's what we were discussing earlier on. I think they're not yet scanned.
They're not mounted?
Yes, they're not yet scanned.
Oh, don't you have a spare...
We can scan...
We have two of those documents. You can give them to the gentleman there. We can, when you say nine, you look at nine, pass it on to gentleman number 2345. Is that not possible?
It is possible, but we can also scan them.
So that's happening live at the moment in the Senzo Miyiwa trial, sorting out some logistics there around photographs, and that feed is courtesy of the SABC.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Hi, Mandy. You know, Mandy, in South Africa, we are allowing lawlessness to happen. People have right to protest, but closing the highway, those people who close the highway must be arrested. But in South Africa, you will never be arrested for closing a highway because we are promoting lawlessness here in this country. Thank you, Mandy.
Thank you very much for that WhatsApp voice note. On the WhatsApp line, Mandy, with the issues, these mushrooming strikes, I think there is a force that is out to tarnish the image of the ANC. It's sheer sabotage by people who are part of the ANC. I think the ANC has done that job themselves at this point in terms of service delivery. I don't think anybody needs to tarnish the image of the ANC. They've done a fairly good job of that. I do think we're going to see a lot more protest service delivery action demonstrations in the run-up to the elections, the same as we saw in Diepkloof earlier today. And that is invariably the case. It always happens before an election. The rate of service delivery protests go up because people want to be heard. And you will see the politicians responding to going out to communities so that they can campaign an electioneer also.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Well, speaking of elections, as I mentioned earlier, more than half of the globe is going to be voting in an election this year. It's not just South Africa. Of course, a lot of attention is on the US and what's happening there. US President Joe Biden, the incumbent, the Democratic candidate, and then also the situation with Republican former President Donald Trump, and some parallels being drawn between Donald Trump and our former President Jacob Zuma and his political resurgence. Well, Siti Madia, EWN Associate Politics Editor, has been in Nevada, which is a swing state, and is now in Ohio, which is also a swing state, and she joins us now. Siti, good afternoon to you. Tell us about your Nevada experience first. I won't ask you about your personal experience in Vegas and what you were up to, because you're there for work purposes, right?
Any work purposes. Good morning, Mandy. It's very early in the morning here in Ohio. I think Nevada has been interesting in that our issues are the same. I think the world over is struggling with a lot of similar issues. When you look at communities in Nevada, the paycheck issues, Mandy, are top of mind as they go to elections. People are worried about the high cost of fuel, of food, of housing. They're worried about water in Nevada. And of course, the picture in the USA and in South Africa, you've got these two former notorious leaders, if I may, making a comeback in 2024 politics.
Yeah, lots of parallels between Donald Trump and Jacob Zuma and the resurgence. What do people say to you there? I can't imagine too many of them appreciate the nuance of Jacob Zuma. But what do people say about what is the sense when they talk about a potential resurgence from Donald Trump?
So the difficulty with Americans is that Americans are so self-involved that they wouldn't know or understand what you mean when you speak about former President Jacob Zuma. Few and far in between understand that actually there's a world bigger than the USA. I think what's been interesting is in Nevada, while it's a swing state, it does mostly lean blue towards the Democrats. So it's purple with a lot of blue leaning. So what you're finding is a lot of communities are more Democrats, Mandy, and they themselves are grappling with what to do. They are unhappy with the Biden administration. They're unhappy that that's the option on the table. But a lot of them will say to you, they feel with Donald Trump resurgence, what they worry about is that democracy in the USA is actually in the ballot, saying that these elections are apocalyptic for them, that if they don't vote, USA will be in trouble going forward, and that it upholds the values that are incorrect. They worry about immigration. The US has a large pool of large community of migrants coming from some of the countries nearby, immigrants coming from nearby countries who are part and parcel of the communities. Again, in Vegas, it is a service community, and you find that the service industry, and you find that it's really made up of a lot of Latino communities, and they're worried that if Trump returns, you'll have even more draconian laws in place as far as immigration is concerned. They're worried that Biden hasn't moved nearly as fast as he should on immigration. You've got the Black Caucus in Clark County worried about police brutality. So the issues we know to be top of mind in the U.S. in terms of ideology remain really big. But as the Democrats battle amongst themselves around Biden, even the issue of the Middle East, Mandy, I must say, is a big talking point for Americans.
You're in Ohio at the moment. I imagine Columbus, Ohio. I ironically did a very similar trip to you in 2007 as a reporter for EWN when it was the McCain-Obama election before Obama won his first term in office. And my sense at the time, Columbus and Ohio is very much a swing state. What struck me was how suburban, middle-class America it is. What are the kind of issues people are talking to you about there?
So it is very, as you said, very urban, very middle class. I just arrived here a few hours ago, so I've started meeting with some of the people. A lot of Democrats, again, even though there's local issues where they're worried about things like zoning, because there'll be primaries that are held here in the coming days. While they worry about local issues, again, Mandy, the Democrats who are participating in the primaries will tell you about the greater concern is the presidential elections. What's interesting about Americans is they worry about the well-being of the state and understand that that speaks directly to their well-being, what happens in their particular state. So there is that, but they are worried about the greater picture. And again, the conversations I've had so far are about what does this mean for democracy. Trump was actually here just before I arrived, where he had a rally, and he was making all sorts of threats, man. He's speaking about a bloodbath if he doesn't win in November. So it's very interesting to see. What I'm looking forward to that I haven't had a chance to do is meet more Republican representatives to hear what their views are. I've met a few who say they don't agree with the view that democracy is on the ballot, that democracy in America is in danger should Trump rise. They speak about change. They speak about the economy. These are some of the Republicans that I've met. A lot of them, Mandy, former military men, if you may, saying that they firmly stand with Trump as Republican candidates. But I'm looking forward to hearing so much more of them about what some of their issues are.
Enjoy it, Siddi. Thank you very much. Look forward to hearing your reports. That's Siddi Madia live from Ohio. I remember going to Columbus, Ohio in 2007, and I attended a McCain rally and a Sarah Palin rally. And it was just like a different world to what we appreciate from here around what happens in the United States and the dichotomy of views between the Democrats and Republicans. An interesting time in the States at the moment.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Well, back to our own election here, and as part of EWN's nationwide pre-election coverage, reporters have been going to all the provinces across the country to get a sense of what some of the key election issues are. Oren Singh has been in the Free State. He's gone to various parts of the Free State. He's also been to Estina. Now, when you think of Estina, and I went to Estina a couple of years ago too as a reporter to go and speak to some of the beneficiaries or non-beneficiaries of the Estina Dairy Farm. Estina is this, and Freda is this fascinating little town that has one street and a hotel that serves a fantastic breakfast, I must tell you, and a church. But obviously, service delivery issues there are very, very key. Oren Singh, EWN reporter, joining us now. Oren, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. You've been around the Free State. You've been to Freda. You've looked at the Estina Dairy Farm project. What are people telling you ahead of these elections?
Good afternoon, Mandy. Definitely a throwback Monday for you. Back with
thank
all
you for making me sound ancient. I mean, from 2007 to Titty's experience to yours, so we can relate.
Mandy, so Freda, as you pointed out, a one-street town, not many people, and a very, very impoverished community. And, you know, when this Estina Dairy Farm project was initiated by government, I think in 2014, It was meant to benefit 65 beneficiaries. And when we talk about 65 beneficiaries, we're talking about essentially 65 families, not 65 people. And fast forward 10 years later, and the only thing that these people received was a 1,000 Rand food voucher, which they got in December last year. Now, Mandy, at the end of the day, it's something. It's something out of all the corruption surrounding that dairy farm, with the links to the Guptas and Free State officials who squandered that money and sent it over to India and funded some of the Guptas' weddings and so forth. At the end of the day, at least it's something that they had received. And now that's part and parcel of the fact that the Free State government had roped in a manager, a farm manager who actually knows what he's doing. Mandy, we went to Stina Farm, dairy farm. We walked around. We interviewed the farm manager. And I think it's safe to say that he actually knows what he's doing. He's got a short, medium, and long-term plan. He's not ahead of himself. He's got the qualifications. And we're only hoping that things can get better from here. But, you know, at the end of the day, the beneficiaries are still, you know, at the end of the day, heartbroken. They're only thinking of what could have been over the past 10 years and where they are now. They're upset. They're angry with government. Many of them don't want to vote. Many of them don't feel the need that they need to take to the polls this year because they have been impacted at corruption at one of the highest levels that this country has seen, implicated in state capture, the Zondo Commission to state capture and so forth. So a lot happening at the moment in Estina. Small gains that the farm manager is managing to overcome and get the farm going. And hopefully the families and the beneficiaries are just hoping that within the next 2 to 3 years, they can see some profit share come out of that farm project.
Well, Oren, thank you very much for that. You have sent us a package as well. So let's have a listen to that.
An elected board comprising of six of the beneficiaries to oversee the management of the former Estina dairy farm are currently facing criminal charges for animal cruelty following an inspection of the animals on the farm by the NSPCA last year. EWN understands that majority of the cows the NSPCA found in poor health were the subject of a questionable 4 million rand purchase. According to board members, their former chairperson, Ephraim Dlamini, purchased 176 cows from a local farmer without consulting his fellow board. Board member David Kumalo says the cows purchased by Dlamini were not worth the cash.
It was not good condition. That's why the SPA say they come there. Is that cows Dlamini they put it?
He says of the 176 cows purchased, approximately 50 were in decent health.
Most of cars they produce maybe per day 7 liters. And you can't buy that car they produce 7 liters in that money. You must get the record, the good record before you buy.
He says Dlamini did not follow proper protocol of consulting the committee or vetting the animals before purchase. Dlamini declined to comment but confirmed he was no longer part of the board. And while the animal cruelty case against the six committee members, as well as the former farm manager, continues to play out in the Frieda Magistrates Court, the family of slain whistleblower Philemon Ngwenya have yet to receive any form of justice. Ngwenya, the late spokesperson for the beneficiaries of the Free State Dairy Farm Project, was found murdered in a shack just outside Frieda in 2018. He was vocal in the media about the corruption surrounding the farm. His daughter, Pendile, says her life in Frieda is one of continuous pain and suffering.
I don't know what the kind of animals people are. Killing a person like you're killing a chicken.
Despite two men being arrested in connection with her father's murder, Pendile says she has lost faith, not only in the justice system, but the entire government.
Never trust everyone. My father had trust in everyone. What did that get him? He get killed easily, and his dad has too many questions. Too many questions, no answers, no justice, while still out there suffering.
She cautions South Africans to be wise when they cast their vote and not be lured into the false promise of a better future. Aaron Singh, Eyewitness News, Frieda in the Free State.
Thank you very much to Oren Singh for bringing us that report as we highlight election issues. He's been to the Free State. Actually, tell that story of Philemon Ngwenya and his daughters and what happened to him in that shack in Freda, in a book that I wrote about whistleblowers. And it's just tragic when you look at the fact that they were promised so much and they have so little. And Oren Singh going back there years later and telling us the same story again, the fact that the Free State government has handed the project back to the rightful owners, but there are still allegations of corruption and mismanagement, and all of this feeds into just discontent and disenfranchisement amongst the electorate ahead of May 29th.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Well, 30 years into democracy, and of course, next week is Human Rights Day. So a human rights conference underway in Boksburg today. We've had the president speaking, also the chief justice speaking today. Let's have a listen to what President Cyril Ramaphosa had to say about our constitution and human rights 30 years into democracy.
We also know that our progress continues to be hindered by delays and lack of diligence on the part of government entities in fulfilling their constitutional obligations. We continue to be plagued by poor service delivery, especially in our municipalities. Corruption deprives citizens of the fulfillment of their rights. While we are rightfully proud of how far our constitutional rights-based order has come, we know that much more still needs to be done to fulfill the promise of the full enjoyment of the basic rights of all our people.
That's the president speaking earlier today at that conference underway about human rights in Boksburg.
Sports Wrap.
Sports Wrap.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
So earlier, if you were listening to the Sports Bulletin with Tolokelo Mganga, who claimed that she never said that Manchester United would lose to Liverpool yesterday in the FA Cup. And I've asked people to please send us voice notes if they were listening to the show on Friday. KG, please play it.
Yes, Mandy, you're right. 100% right. I was listening on Friday. She said she's not even sure if they can score even one goal against Liverpool, because Liverpool playing at home. Yeah, no, she was... No, now she's changing the story. But you know what? It's fine. Yeah, good show. And greetings to all the 702 land.
We keep receipts here on the Midday Report, Tolokelo. So, Mawande Mateza, thank you very much for coming in, because Tolokelo was too scared to... Clearly.
Afternoon, Mandy. Yeah, I understand. But to be fair to her, I think a lot of people were expecting Liverpool to run away with it, especially how they've played over the last couple of weeks and the fact that they scored 6 goals against Sparta Prague. What was it, on Thursday in the Europa League as well? But it's one of those things as well. Sometimes you want to think that your team is going to do a lot worse than they do. So that is quite a relief and a pleasant surprise when they do a lot better than you expected them to.
She just WhatsApped me saying I never doubted them with lots of smiley faces.
Always back to really. No, fair play. What a game it was as well on Sunday, yesterday. That was a phenomenal game to watch. And it's one of those as well where it could have gone either way. And I don't think you could call it right until the end. I know a lot of people were expecting it to go to a penalty shootout and expecting the tenseness of all of that. And I just cannot imagine what it would have felt like for somebody who wasn't a neutral, who had skin in the game and something invested in either team, what it would have felt like going through the range of emotions throughout the 120 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty tense. I was in an environment where there were lots of fans from both sides, and it was pretty tense. Local football?
Yeah, so we had the Nedbank Cup taking place over the weekend. It's the round of 16. The 8 games probably went the way that a lot of people would have predicted. No major upsets in this one. And going into the quarterfinal draw, which happens tonight, we've got 7 teams in the DStv Premiership. The only side from outside of that is the University of Pretoria that are in the quarterfinals. Yesterday, we had Mamelodi Sundowns beating Maritzburg United 2-0 with with two goals from Tembingosi Lodge. Fascinating thing that came out of that one was the Sundowns coach, Rulani Mokoena, talking about how the fact that he's not quite happy with how Tembingosi Lodge has performed. He's been brilliant since he's joined Sundowns in January. However, Rulani says that he expects more from him, just like he expects from every other player. And it's one of those things in my mind that clicks. I'm like, oh my word, this is what Sundowns are about. It's never been content with what you have and where you are at the moment, and it's always about improving and being better. And the other one was Orlando Pirates, who won 4-0 against Hungary Lions. They've been free flowing and free scoring against the lower teams, which is what you expect from a side of their caliber. And it was also very nice to see Tshegofatso Mabasa scoring two goals over there. He's been out on loan in previous seasons to Maroka Swallows and Sekhukhune United in the past. And just before the Soweto derby, he was talking about how he needs to score goals and prove himself so that he can stay for a longer period at Pirates. So it looks like he's living up to that.
I have to read you this tweet from Kia Metswe that says, at Mandy Wiener, if broadcasting no longer appeals to Tola Kele and she is in need of a career change, politics would be a perfect switch. I think she would look good in that green and black ANC Women's League two-piece. She knows what she said on Friday. Today she does a complete 360-degree turn. What an excellent tweet. You see, Tola Kele should be a politician. She could just say whatever she wanted on any given day. So accurate. Mwande, rugby this weekend, Six Nations drawing to a close. Thoughts?
Yeah, again, one of those where you had Scotland narrowly missing out against Ireland and putting up a really, really good performance. I think we all expected Ireland to go on and win it, but Scotland did put up somewhat of a fight. And then we also had Italy not getting the wooden spoon this year.
So happy.
Yes. Same here. And it's one of those rugby, competitive rugby needs a competitive Italy, and you need some of your smaller sides to put in big results and cause upsets every once in a while. It's not fun. Sometimes you get that in like a sport like netball where the bigger team is always going to win. So that was really, really enjoyable to see Italy doing well. And then yesterday's game between France and England as well. Very, very tense.
It was late Saturday night. Saturday. I did actually watch some morning, of it. Yeah.
With France coming out on top over there. So fascinating Six Nations tournament to watch this year, and it, I think it bodes well for the coming tours that are happening in the Southern Hemisphere in a couple of months' time in here and over in New Zealand as well.
And then very quickly, Carlos Alcaraz and Iga Swiatek, both victorious in the desert.
Yeah, I enjoyed Alcaraz especially. One thing that I have noticed is that he looks a lot trimmer and a lot leaner and firmer in his body this year. And he's talking about how he just simply outlasted Medvedev, especially in the second set. And he's also talking about how he's rediscovered his love for the game. And I think that's an ominous warning for the rest of the field going into the rest of the season. And also, you've got to think that he's going to be the favorite next week out in Miami as well. And for Iga Swiatek, again, it's Iga. If somebody's going to dominate on the women's tour, it's going to be her. Polished performance once again in the final. What is it, 60-odd minutes or so against Maria Sakkari in the final? Yeah, expected.
Mwande, thank you so much for wrapping up all of that sport.
Mandy is on Twitter
@MandyWiener.